A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues these organizations are facing. Today, I'll pick up on my examination of the challenges facing music schools. The Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester is holding a leadership conference in June to discuss many of the issues, such as recruitment, fundraising, and curriculum, and today we'll hear from Eastman Dean Jamil Rossi and Jim Dozer, director of Eastman's Institute for Music Leadership. Joining in the conversation will be fellow conference participants Tony Marie Montgomery, Dean of the Beenan School of Music at Northwestern University, and Robert Cudieta, Dean of the Thornton School of Music at the University of Southern California. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Juilliard School announced that Damian Wetzel will serve as its next president, succeeding Joseph Polisi. Wetzel currently serves as director of the Aspen Institute Arts Program and artistic director of Vail Dance Festival, and is a former principal dancer at New York City Ballet. He also served as a member of the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities between 2009 and 2017, helping develop a program to bring arts education to challenge school districts. Juilliard announced last fall that Polisi, its longest-serving president, would be stepping down in June of 2018. Wetzel will be Juilliard's seventh president and the first dancer to hold that position. Winners of the International Opera Awards were announced this week, with Opéra de Lyon taking the award for Best Opera Company and the Arnold Schoenberg Corps being named Best Chorus. Top Singer Awards went to soprano Anna Netrebko and tenor Lawrence Brownlee, with soprano Renata Scotto receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award. The Metropolitan Opera received the award for new production for its staging of Sarajevo's L'Amour de Loin, staged last December and directed by Robert Lepage. A full list of winners can be found at operaawards.org. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. A few weeks ago, we heard about how the San Francisco Conservatory of Music has been revising its curriculum and offering new programs to expand its reach and provide students the relevant skills they'll need to build a career in the ever-changing music world. We pick up that theme again today, turning to an upcoming music leadership conference that will be held in June by the Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester. I brought together several of the presenters recently for our own roundtable discussion, including Jamil Rossi, the Joan and Martin Messinger Dean of the Eastman School of Music, Jim Dozer, Director of Eastman's Institute for Music Leadership, Tony Marie Montgomery, Dean of the Beenan School of Music at Northwestern University, and Robert Cudieta, Dean of the Thornton School of Music at the University of Southern California. I asked them to talk about some of these specific challenges that they see day to day, beginning with Beenan's Montgomery.
Major issues, I think, for many schools that are part of universities, like research universities, and all three of us represent schools of music that are then also members of research universities. It's just the role of music and the arts at research universities, because, of course, emphasis always is on the sciences, our medical school programs that actually bring in money rather than are actually costly. One-on-one instruction, you know, someone having trumpet lessons is more expensive than, of course, having a class where you would have 100 students or more and one instructor and a couple teaching assistants. The competition among our schools is an issue. When I say competition, I just had a faculty member come in to talk about scholarships, and this followed up on a discussion that we had had with the faculty executive committee. We finished our admission process, and then, you know, there's always faculty saying, well, we don't have enough money, and so how can we receive more because schools X and Y are then offering higher scholarship offers. I guess the third one that I would say is just the future of classical music, which is the majority of our programs here at Northwestern, and what are those careers that are offered. The interest that most of our undergraduate parents have in our dual degree program, which is a five-year program, students that are majoring in music and then another field. That's very attractive to these parents because, of course, they are thinking about the future careers of their sons or daughters after graduation.
Jamal, how about you from your position at Eastman?
One challenge that we all face, and I think higher education in general, is simply the cost of education. So finding ways to make it affordable for those students who want to attend either Eastman or any other school, to make it affordable for them to do so is a challenge. But again, I think that is one that is not only faced by schools of music, but by all universities. The second bigger issue is how do we prepare students for this changing music world? As the world is changing constantly every day, so too is music. And it's a question of how do we prepare our students for the unknown? We really don't know what the impact of technology on music will be 10 or 20 years from now. Yet that's when our students will be in the prime of their careers. We don't know if performing opportunities will increase or decrease, or if they will change. So I think we all are dealing with the question of how do we serve our students best by preparing them to enter the world?
And Jim, as director of the Eastman Institute for Music Leadership, that's something you're looking at every day on several levels. What's your perspective?
I'd take a little different perspective than what's been said so far and say that one of our biggest challenges is in finding ways to give students permission to envision a life in music that is different from that of their teachers. It's a different world, and sometimes they come in so focused on recreating the same career path as their teachers that it's a shock to them to find out, and they almost feel guilty about creating something that's new and unique to them.
And Robert, what about Thornton School?
I think the biggest challenge is we are in just an amazing time of change. Schools have to change, and I think they have to change fundamentally, and it's so hard to do that because we have so many structures in place that are very hard to change. They really kind of restrict us from change. You know, the competition aspect is real, and I think it should be our number one concern that as there are less and less students every year who want to study the kind of music our schools offer, the competition for those students just becomes extreme. But the bigger issue there is that we have just focused on a tiny, tiny segment of young people and what their needs are. And there is no shortage of kids who want to major in music. I just am afraid that they don't see majoring in music as we envision that. But it is such a time of change and predicting where that's going to be. I always thought if I was alive, you know, during the Renaissance, that I would be Leonardo da Vinci. And I think we are in another Renaissance, and I'm as confused as the next person.
I will get to the conference in a bit, but let's take a look at some of these issues, and maybe you can bring in some examples that you've seen on your campus. There's two major issues from what I would see from the students. First is attracting the students and then making sure you are providing them with the tools they really need, whether or not they may realize it when they come in. How have you seen, first of all, appealing to a broad group of students or appealing to the appropriate group of students to make sure you can provide them the curriculum and education they're looking for? Robert, why don't you start with that one?
I think we've taken a big step in that direction. We actually have created a whole new division within the school, and it's equal size and equal quality, everything of the traditional one. So we've actually put side by side, just created a new music school that's all contemporary things. It's songwriting, it's popular music performance and arranging, it is recording, it's music production, it's film scoring, it's all of those things. So since everything's new, everything was invented, I think, in looking at a new way, which has career plans and everything else built into it. And we are meeting those needs very, very clearly. And truthfully, the biggest issue we often talk about is how to reduce the number of applicants because it's so selective. We have about a 4% acceptance rate in that area. So we know that there's just massive of young people out of high school who are outrageously talented and smart and want to major in music, and we can't deal with them all. Transfer over to the, you know, the classical side, and you know, we hear things about needing to recruit. We hear things about we need more scholarship dollars. We need all these kinds of things, just because all the schools are competing over those same dwindling numbers of kids, and it's pretty obvious from a 30,000 foot level, but what do you do about it? Yeah, I mean, none of us are going to just abandon classical music, and it's, you know, just such an important part of what we do. But it is really, by definition, dealing with such a small, you know, segment of musicians. And that's the challenge right there.
I would say our focus is on our brand, which is the artist/scholar. We use the fact that the academic rigor and expectations for, this is definitely for undergraduates, is so high and competitive at the university, and the fact that our music students, then, in addition to meeting the talent expectations of our faculty, then must also meet the competitive nature of the university. So taking what has been seen by some faculty as a negative and just embracing it and saying that this is a reason that you would come as an undergrad to Northwestern. And actually, the university is also kind of embracing it, talking about the DNA that you have the opportunity not only to, if you're admitted, of course, to our school, to pursue music as a career, but that you also have a dual degree, you have minors, you're able not to be dilettantes, but that you really have significant opportunities and meaningful opportunities if you come to a research university rather than going to a conservatory that's standalone.
I think that this idea of how do we reach students, and I think it's very important that each school know what it's about and communicate that clearly to students, and for students to have the opportunity to find that school that speaks to them and their career aspirations. On the one hand, we're all very much the same. I mean, there are 600 accredited music schools in the country, and we all teach trombone and trumpet and piano and violin, and some schools do various things apart from that. But in fact, in many ways, we are different, and we have to communicate that. So again, at Eastman, our philosophy is one that influence matters, and it matters in music. And so one has to start with a very high level of artistry if one is going to be a professional musician. There are so many fine musicians that excellence really does matter to have a fighting chance. Second, we believe that, you know, we need to encourage students and draw out of them traits like curiosity, like learning to be versatile and adaptable. If they're not curious and if they're not prepared to be lifelong learners, it's very hard for me to know how they will adapt to a changing music world. So we try to focus on values that we want our students to graduate with. And then the third piece is to have sort of some real world skills that are perhaps musicians used to learn in the real world. Well, can we give them a leg up before they graduate? So, in fact, in the Institute of Music Leadership, which Jim leads, we offer courses like career skills for the 21st century and entrepreneurial thinking and digital marketing and the kind of extra skills that a person will need to be able to forge their own career in music. And so, again, I think that, you know, we try to make certain that our students know that. I think Beenan makes certain that, you know, they know what their brand is. And then it's a matter of trying to help students align with the right school. So there are challenges and opportunities in that.
Turning to the conference, what are some of the issues that you're specifically looking to examine?
The conference is certainly going to talk about some of these larger issues and big picture problems that we all face. But we are also very focused on providing the attendees with very specific skills in areas that they're going to need, some real takeaways. For example, understanding the procedures and the needs in recruitment and enrollment, how to understand the four or five or six most essential elements of financial management at a university music school. Understanding the process for vision and strategic management at the leadership level. So we are considering and we'll embed all of our conversations with these very critical large issues, but also focusing on tangible takeaways for each participant to leave with.
As participants or discussion moderators and leaders, what do you all feel that you're going to be focusing on and hopefully bringing to the attendees?
I agree. I think it was Jamal who said that schools are all different. They aren't drastically different, but they all are different schools of music, and matching students to the right school is very important. A lot of people always ask, you know, what's the best music school in the country? And there's only one answer to that, and that answer is for what student. And I think as a network of music schools, we do a good job of having something out there for everyone. But I think we could do so much better. I think what has to happen now is schools find out really what is their identity and flaunt that identity and really not try to be everything for everyone and find themselves. So I know I'll be working my time on helping schools to, how do you actually go about that? How do you find out who you are and what you want to be? Because I think that that is the healthiest thing that could happen to our profession. If schools really could differentiate themselves so that a student can say, you know what, I really want to go to fill in the blank, not because they're giving me more scholarship money, but because I belong there. And I think we're a long way from that right now, or at least articulating it. So that's what my emphasis is going to be on techniques and ways to think about who are you and how are you different. And then how do you make that even more so? Because they are different, but I think we each need to move into even more diversification to give students more choice.
Because I think of the diversity of roles of the participants thus far, so you have some people in admission, some are new to administration. I think a lot of at least my first session will be, well, first of all, what are the responsibilities of an academic administrator? What are the skills that are needed, say, in budgeting, fundraising, personnel? Just knowing then being part of an institution and how does the role of a music administrator, say at a state institution or if it's standalone, how do the roles of that individual differ at an institution? So I think kind of connecting with what Rob was talking about, the institution and figuring out your brand, but where does this administrator in making decisions fit? What are networking opportunities? Because, of course, if we're at a university, there's one music program. And then who are your colleagues? Yes, you have decanal colleagues who may be in the sciences or liberal arts, but their issues are very different from those of an academic music person. So how do those roles differ? How do you find connections and mentors and networks? And I think helping for those who are attending to decide, those who are not administrators, is this really what I want to do? And hopefully the sessions will help them to say, yes, this is what I want to do. Or maybe if I'm a faculty member, my strengths are really more in pursuing my creative or scholarly activities.
Jim?
Well, my role is much more limited in the delivery at the conference. My role will be to pull together all the different threads of all the presenters and help the participants design the activities that they will complete post-conference as part of an online cohort group.
Jamal?
So Rob talked before about that our institutions have structure. And if you want to change something, then you need to know how to do that and you need to have a plan for doing it. So in fact, I'll be talking about the value of a strategic plan that it first has to come out of the mission of the institution, and there has to be a vision of the leader or a vision that is shared by the entire unit of where that unit is going to go. And then I think the key part is wanting to go someplace and wanting to have change is one thing. The other is, what are the steps that are required to get there? How will you measure that? How will you be able to measure success along the way? And how do you keep yourself disciplined to stick with that plan over time?
So, Jim, getting back to what your role is then, what opportunities will the participants then have to follow up? What will their task be after they leave the conference to make some of this happen at their own schools?
I think one of the most important elements that you can take away from an excellent professional development conference is that you develop relationships, just like Marie was saying, with colleagues who can support each other and can provide people to listen and give you feedback on your ideas. So as the participants go through these sessions, and we'll have time for them to reflect, ask follow-up questions, and identify those areas that they believe they would like that kind of support on in their own programs. And so we will divide our participants up into cohorts that they can continue that conversation, that we will facilitate and continue to provide resources for them to continue the conversation and apply it in their own environment.
Now, one other element of this is that there's a graduate fellowship portion, and I was wondering what types of opportunities will this be presenting for those students who will be able to attend?
The graduate fellows will be side by side with the professional participants. They'll be treated the same. They will not sit together. They'll be intermixed. They'll participate in every activity. So I think it's going to be very valuable in two ways. One is that they're really going to get the inside baseball on what music leadership is about and hear those real discussions about what they need to do. But secondly, and I think maybe even more importantly, they are going to be developing their own network now. As Jamble was saying before, you have to do these things before you get out into the real world. And so this gives them a leg up, I believe.
Many of these issues really reflect certainly broader issues, whether it's the fundraising side or the cultural diversity issue, which is a growing issue now on campuses. I understand there was a petition in the last month or so on Beenin regarding bringing more cultural diversity into the music curriculum. What are the roles that you see your individual schools have, or should say can play, as our broader society wrestles and looks at these different issues?
We share this responsibility to have not only representation from diverse ethnic groups as far as students, our student body, but also faculty. And, this is something that I wrestle with daily because we have searches, faculty searches, and it's not like an orchestra where you do blind auditions, but the numbers of diverse faculty then who actually even apply for our positions are just really minimal, and that is reflected in the few numbers that we have of diversity among our faculty ranks. So I have performed music by African American and Black composers since the 1990s, and you're right, there was a petition from, it's actually a saxophonist, Jamel, a saxophone master student, who raised the issue of just the lack of mention in music theory, music history courses of music by diverse composers. And a lot of that, of course, all of it goes back to the faculty, and we will be having a meeting that I've scheduled, at least not with the performance faculty, but with our academic faculty and several of these students just talking about their desire to have more representation. I always talk about when I was a doctoral student at University of Michigan, and there was one paragraph about William Grant Still in our music history book, and then the faculty member asked me to speak about that. So things have changed drastically because I am now a dean and at a major music school, but in many ways our curricula has not changed enough.
You asked what our responsibility is about this. I think our responsibility is to lead and to try to change the situation. Toni Marie spoke about the challenge of recruiting faculty, and she's absolutely right. But I think that the challenge is even viewed at undergraduate admissions. All of our programs, a significant portion of them, are built on classical music, and they're competitive programs to get into. We have a few seats available, and sometimes, 10 or 20 students per student availability applying. So I think that the key is really reinvigorating music for children. And I think that universities can play a role in this in their own communities and making certain that there's access and opportunity for all children, children of all ethnicities and all financial backgrounds, because it's not enough just to have access to music. They have to have access to high-quality music instruction if they're going to be competitive students to enroll in top music programs. At that point, all students then can be competitive as they move on to graduate degrees and professional careers, but we have to diversify our student bodies first. Along with that is exactly what Tony Marie talked about, is the curriculum has to reflect that diversity as well. And I think each of us in our own way are making strides toward that, but I also think we have a long way to go.
We're one part of a much larger issue. You know, yes, as Jamal said, it starts with young children and bringing them into the pipeline. We're just part of that road to the professional world as musicians. So that doesn't mean we can wash our hands of it. We have to turn things around, but we have to be advocates for that. This is not a university issue as much as it's a profession issue that I think we have to address. We have just submitted, just literally last week, a 5-year plan to the university to diversify both our student body and our faculty. And even there, it was very interesting to look at it that way and see the challenges and see how far we have to go. Tony Marie mentioned about, you know, having a minority composer that she actually worked with. So we tried to figure out, how are we going to do that? We want to make sure we're inclusive. So this year, as one of the first steps towards diversification, we did something that actually was pretty cool. We redesigned our music history sequence for music majors. And instead of studying chronologically or even composers, we studied big questions. For example, some music's notated and some isn't. Why? That way we could put Thelonious Monk next to Mozart and actually compare them. But one of the questions, one of the big questions is, who wrote this piece of music and can you tell? They actually listen to music written by women, written by minorities, written by, you know, famous tradition, and without knowing who it is. And they discuss this and everything. Only later do they find out, you know, who wrote that piece of music? Mm-hmm. And, wow, this one was a woman. This one was, you know, an African-American. This one was Asian. It's very fascinating. So it was, we tried it as an experiment, and it really went well, and now it's a permanent part of our curriculum. I think these are the things we have to do every step of the way in our curriculum. This has to be addressed everywhere, and not just in token ways of saying, here's a little bit you can do, or what's the quota, or whatever it is. I think there are fundamental ways that we can really make a difference here. But there again, we're just part of a much, much bigger issue going on here that does start with early education and everything else that's been, you know, so changed in our society.
That was Robert Cudieta, Dean of the Thornton School of Music at the University of Southern California. He was joined in my recent roundtable discussion by Tony Marie Montgomery, Dean of the Beenan School of Music at Northwestern University, Jamal Rossi, the Joan and Martin Messinger Dean of the Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester, and Jim Dozer, Director of Eastman's Institute for Music Leadership. More information on the Music Leadership Conference, which will take place June 21st to 24th, can be found at musicleadership.com. I hope you appreciate the conversations I bring you each week on A Tempo, and all of the other high-quality programs of the award-winning Classical Network. Remember, these programs are possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. An archive of recent shows can be found anytime at our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the changing world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is supported by the listener members of the Classical Network.